David Eagle's blog, read by David Eagle. This was posted on the 31st of October 2012, and it's called Kill Your Dog for Satan. I was having a Twitter conversation with Danny Robbins an hour or so before the broadcast of the documentary. In one of the tweets, I wrote, "Just one more night of peace before you become an official enemy of the RSPCA." This was, of course, in reference to his song that featured in the documentary called Kill Your Dog for Satan. Almost immediately after sending this tweet, I got an alert from Twitter telling me that I was now being followed by the RSPCA. But it wasn't the RSPCA nationally, it was the North Wiltshire branch. I have no idea why North Wiltshire RSPCA is so much more proactive when it comes to Twitter than the RSPCA in other regions. Perhaps there are a lot less injured animals to tend to in North Wiltshire, and so they have quite a bit of time to just sit around and play on Twitter. Well, there's one way we can find out. Start beating up animals in the North Wiltshire area and see if their presence on Twitter reduces. If it doesn't, then you know that there's something wrong and that they're definitely just sitting around playing on the office computer rather than saving animals. In the long run, you'd actually be helping the animals of North Wiltshire by outing the North Wiltshire RSPCA staff as born idle, selfish bastards who are happy to let animals suffer while they fritter away their time on Twitter. So, get beating up those animals. It's for the greater good. As an experiment, I wrote some tweets containing NSPCC, RNIB and RNLI. Over 15 hours have gone by, and none of these charities are yet to follow me. As someone who is blind, I feel a little bit let down by the RNIB's negligence in this area. All I can hope is that they're too busy coming up with a cure for blindness. My Twitter connection with the North Wiltshire branch of the RSPCA was very short-lived. By the time I went back on Twitter, just after the documentary had finished, they had unfollowed me. Perhaps they'd heard me sing Kill Your Dog for Satan on Six Music, or maybe they are just very fickle and will unfollow you if you haven't followed them back within 2 hours. Well, there's no way I'm ever giving money to the RSPCA, or at least not the North Wiltshire team anyway. If you ever see an injured or distressed animal in Swindon or Salisbury, don't come to me about it. I'm not interested. I thought the documentary was excellent. My bit only constituted about 5 minutes of the programme. We did quite a lot of recording on the moor, but they only used a small amount of what had been recorded. Probably for the best. The naked orgiastic dancing probably wouldn't have really worked on the radio, to be honest. The way Danny introduced me to the listeners was quite interesting. I was labelled as a blind accordion player. While this is, of course, entirely true, I wondered why the fact that I was blind had been mentioned, as it wasn't really relevant in any way. If I was a black man, would I have been introduced as a black accordion player? Perhaps Danny thought that blind accordion player sounded a bit more sinister. It might cause some of the listeners to think that I'd been blinded by an evil curse. It's strange, though, that even on the radio, where my sight loss really shouldn't need to be apparent, the fact that I am blind is deemed to still be relevant, even though it had no connection with the subject of the documentary at all. Obviously, I don't find it at all offensive. I just find it strange that people feel it is a major part of who I am and therefore needs to be mentioned. Anyway, the documentary is now available on the iPlayer, and I'm going to leave you now by playing out my little appearance on this documentary, including the Kill Your Dog for Satan song. So thank you for listening. This is David Eagle, aka the Blind Accordion Player, signing off.
So, Gavin, where are we now?
We're out on Hob Moor, just outside the boundaries of Old York. It's appropriate, in my opinion, because Hob is an old Northern English Scottish word, which means either goblin or devil.
But then we come out here because you've got a theory, haven't you, about a medieval witches' sabbat?
It's basically the idea that if these witches, orgies, meetings, rites actually took place, then perhaps the closest modern parallel would be a music festival.
So what kind of evidence have you got for this then?
What's interesting about the descriptions we have are these meetings where there's orgiastic dancing, there are drugs, there's strange music, which the inquisitors and witch hunters describe as being both sweet and somehow sinister. And the idea, of course, course, is that, you know, if you read some of these descriptions, it sounds a lot like some of the accounts we get from Christian clergymen in the 1950s about what they thought was going on in rock and roll dance halls. It's the same idea of music being a vehicle for the unholy.
So we have an actual real-life, genuine musician with us, David, from the Young'uns Folk Band. Hello, David.
Hello. Real life at the moment, but I'm fearing for my life.
But you've got your accordion with you.
I have, yes, yes. Says hello.
You've got some accounts, haven't you, of witches' sabbats?
Yes. Bear in mind that the archetype of witch we think of is a woman. In the medieval sabbat, you have a combination. The only sort of defining factor is these are all rebels against the tyranny of the church. And so these are people all gathered to throw off all of the restraints of conventional society, which, again, is a bit like a festival. They typically dance back to back, so it might be in a big ring, all facing away from each other. One of the witch hunters suggests this is to make sure they can't identify each other, which does seem a particularly silly piece of reasoning. It's more likely because this goes against the way in which people conventionally dance.
I have danced back-to-back in a nightclub before where I sort of rubbed my bottom against a lady's bottom once.
There are certain levels of unholiness I'm sure we can't talk about even after midnight.
So, Gavin, what can we expect to happen here?
The idea is to evoke the devil. And if he arrives, the polite thing to do is you must perform the osculum infame, the kiss of shame. So the devil will turn his back to you and he will bend over and proffer what is supposed to be the devil's best feature, and you must kiss him there.
Goodness. So to evoke the spirit of the Witch's Sabbat through the power of music, I've got a song here that I wrote when I was 16 years old. It was my own attempt at occult rock. I was in a bit of a gothy band.
Right.
It's called Kill Your Dog for Satan.
Okay.
Are you up for singing it with me? David, could you offer some accompaniment?
It would be a dream come true, Danny. Here we go.
We could dance if we want, but it is quite cold and wet. So it goes like this.
Wake up, Rover, it's time to die. Look up into the darkened sky. You've been my pet for many fun years. Now I've got a task that'll cause you tears. Your days of warmth and security are through, 'cause I've got another use for you. I'm afraid it's not quite as nice. You're gonna be a blood sacrifice.
Kill your dog for Satan. Kill your dog for Satan.
Amazingly, my teenage occult rock song fails to summon the Goat of Mendes, though it does scare a passing cyclist. Thankfully, David saves the day by singing a folk song that's actually about a witch.
And she said, now ride with your faithful hounds at heel and your good grey hawk in hand. There's none can harm the knight who's lain with the witch of the Westmoreland.
You've been listening to Desperately Seeking Satan, a Six Music special with me, Danny Robbins.